43 is on the board now.
Ekai
adharmaha
vishnataha
sthanam
dandasya
yujyate
sarve
karma
anurodhena
dandam
arhanti
karinaha
etar dharma
vishnata
danam dandasya yujyate
sarve karma anurodhena
dandam maranti karinaha
etat adharmo
vishnata
sthanam
dandasya
yujyate
sarve
karmanurodhena
dandam maranti karinaha
etar dharmo vishnata
sthanam
dandasya yujyate
sarve karma anurodhena
dandam maranti karinaha
etar dharmo
vishnata
sthanam dandasya yujyate
sarve karma anurodhena
dandam maranti karinaha
etar
by all these witnesses, beginning from the sun god,
last verse,
adharmaha,
deviation from the regulative principles,
vishnataha,
is known,
sthanam,
the proper place,
dandasya,
of punishment,
yujyate,
is accepted as
sarve,
all
karma
anurodhena,
with consideration of the activities performed,
dandam,
punishment,
oranti,
deserve,
karinaha,
the performers of sinful activities.
Translation:
the candidates for punishment are those who are confirmed
by these many witnesses
to have deviated from their prescribed regulative duties.
Everyone engaged in fruitive activities is suitable to be subjected to punishment according to his sinful acts.
So it's 244.
sambhavanti hi badrani viparitani chanakha karinam guna sangosti lehavanna hyadharma krit.
Let's do the word for word.
Sambhavanti, there are, he, indeed, badrani, auspicious, pious activities, viparitani, just the opposite, inauspicious, sinful activities, cha, also, anaga, O sinless inhabitants of Vaikuntha, karinam, of the fruitive workers, guna-sangaha, contamination of the three modes of nature, asti, there is, dehavan, anyone who has accepted this material body. He, indeed, a karmakrit, without performing action. Translation. O inhabitants of Vaikuntha, you are sinless. But those within this material world are all karmis. Whether acting piously or impiously, both kinds of actions are possible for them, because they are contaminated by the three modes of nature and must act accordingly. One who has accepted a material body cannot be inactive, and sinful action is inevitable for one acting under the modes of material nature. Therefore, all the living entities within this material world are punishable. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The difference between human beings and non-human beings is that a human is supposed to act according to the direction of the Vedas. Unfortunately, men manufacture their own ways of acting without reference to the Vedas. Therefore, all of them commit sinful actions and are punishable. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vipaleshmati Bhakti Vedanta Samyakti Navane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravarika Charanini Vishesha Sunyavarika Chachare Satarani Omang Yaram Kimaranda Sagaranjana Sharakaya Chaksur Militum Jainam Tasman Sidhara Panchakalpa Tripis Chakrika Sindhu Vyeva Chapati Tanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So the question asked previously by the sinless messengers of Lord Vishnu, to describe the sinless. It's interesting to call them sinless because we're describing everyone else who's sinless. Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable? Or only some of them? So here's the answer. So, the candidates for punishment are those who are confirmed by these many witnesses that is mentioned in the last verse. The sun, the fire, the sky, the air, the devas, moon, evening, day, so on. Who are confirmed by these many witnesses to have deviated from their prescribed regulative duties. That is to say, they are known, Vishnata Adharma. Adharma. tatru sthanam dandasya yujate. That is the proper place here for danda. Danda, punishment. The rod. Literally, the rod. Spare the rod and spoil the child. The rod. The rod of punishment. There, that's the place of application for punishment. Dharma, Prabhupada, and the word for word, deviation from the regular principles, or have deviated from the prescribed or regulative duties. And then, everyone engaged in fruitive activities is suitable to be subject to punishment according to his sinful activities. So not those, first of all, the broader class, not those who are within the material world, who are, next verse, Dehavan. They've accepted material bodies, and because of that, guna sangaha, they are associated or contaminated by the three modes of material nature. These are the fruit of workers. And in the translation, Prabhupada expands the purport of this a little bit, that what they say is that all of these people, only one who has been sinful is subject to punishment. So there are karmis who have the option of not being sinful. They have the option of following the injunctions of the Vedas. But the implication is all of these sometime or another will do something sinful. One who has accepted a material body cannot be inactive. And sinful activity is inevitable for one acting under the modes of material nature. Sooner or later, there will be something sinful. Therefore, all living entities within this material world are punishable. So the main point is, Prabhupada makes, that a human being is supposed to act according to the direction of the Vedas.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When they say acting by the Vedas in this global context with, you know, Krishna following the Vedas, so to speak, but the Vedas to their followers.
Yes, so we say the Vedas. But what does the Vedas mean? The eternal injunctions of the Lord, which are co-eternal with Him and are permanent. And so we call a particular group of texts from India the Vedas particularly. But the word Veda means knowledge. And so Prabhupada has said that wherever there is knowledge, there is Veda. Not really restricted to this group of manifest texts. And the knowledge is higher or lower, just like whatever there's mathematical knowledge, that's mathematical knowledge, but there's real differences in the in third grade texts and in the graduate school texts. And the person, now those who have higher knowledge can understand the lower, but not vice versa. It was a real shock when I learned, we learned the rules of arithmetic first. And one of the rules was stated as a rule, you cannot subtract a higher number from a lower number, just against the rules. Then, you know, a few grades later, you know, you can subtract 7 from 5 and get -2. And it was a real shock. I really went to this thing, though. They lied to us. So this is the consideration. So wherever there's knowledge, there's Vedas. There's a god sister of mine. I think her name is, I remember, Sarveshwari. She told Sudamini and me that she had a conversation with Prabhupada, and she'd asked Prabhupada about her grandfather, who was a extremely pious rabbi, and that he had followed strictly all the commandments of Torah. I think 630 something, or I think that's the number. Anyway, there's all these commandments of Torah, and he had followed them very, very strictly. And she said, what was his destination? And Prabhupada said, if he followed them, then he went to the heavenly planets. So he told me instead. So, first of all, this kind of Judaism is a karma kanda religion, a pious activity. If you follow those scriptures, you by Vedic standards, you're doing sinful things, like killing cows and stuff like that. But still, I mean, that's what he said. If you follow the times. So one is supposed to follow the injunctions of scriptures. They're meant for different people, different grades of people sometimes, so they're higher or lower. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a discussion, an important discussion on this topic, because there's a description of the demons. And this is the characteristics of the demons, is, it says earlier on in the chapter, they do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. That is to say, they don't know what is prescribed duty and what is not. The nature of the scripture, it gives pravittam chana vittam ta jana na vidur asuraha. They do not know what is ought to be done. When you say prescribed duty, they're injunctions. It's enjoined upon one. And the case endings in Sanskrit are called vidilin. There's a particular set of verbal forms just for injunctions. In Greek, it's called the optative. And in English, it's conveyed by the word ought. Something ought to be done.
Imperative.
No, imperative is a command. Do this. That's imperative is different. Imperative is another set of endings. Where you command somebody, just do this. But the optative, when I say, you ought to do this, then, well, what am I saying? When I say something's awkward. No, there's something more, there's something different from just saying do it. Because I'm saying somehow or other, there's a prescribed system of rules that says this ought to be done, this is the right thing to do, as opposed to that which ought not to be done. Now, this ought doesn't have any force today because you never hear it. I mean, in ordinary English, I never hear the word ought. It's just disappeared. It used to be much more frequent. People even they say, what should I do? They won't say, what ought I to do? It it's gone. It's disappearing. Because the thing about injunctions, there has to be an authority. And when you say something is my duty, that also is a similar sense. This is my duty. Duties are usually now prescribed by, well, like in the United States Military Academy, their motto is honor, duty, country. So duty. Because in that group there's a recognition of authority. And it is necessary in the military to follow authority. In the heat of battle, when you're given an order, you can't stop and debate it. And you don't know the whole. So it was obedience to authority is a necessary principle. And following the injunctions of it, what your orders, that's called duty. You have your duty. And duty means, in most cases, it implies that you'll do something. Why? Because it ought to be done, whether or not you feel like it. What you ought to do, whether or not you feel like it. So this sense has become lost. And now there are these duties that are sometimes rooted in a particular military authoritative social structure. Because the duty or the optative for the vidi lin means something is enjoined or prescribed, that means ultimately there has to be an authority. So when there's an authority, then there's duties. When there is no authority, then the concept of duty disappears. And Simon Weil points out where the idea of rights came from, human rights. And she says that the people of the French Revolution, 1789, when the whole thing about the rights, human rights. Of course, it was early the American Revolution, the rights of man, Thomas Paine, and so on. We have certain inalienable rights which are guaranteed to us. She says that this talk of rights only comes up when people don't know their duties. Because the idea of God is gone. And if you have duties, if you look, she points out that we talk about rights, but actually it's just a disguised form. Because if I have a right, that means other people have duties toward me. Like if I have a right to full employment, I can just say, I have to say to somebody, where's my job? It means that somebody else has a duty to give me a job. So why don't we just talk about the duties? Well, it doesn't work out because if the duty is primary, who is enjoined that I must do this? Whether I feel like it or not, that is, I'm obliged, I'm obligated to find this person a job. Because duties ultimately come from Shastra. They're authoritative. The idea of an injunction, it's not a statement of fact. You ought to do this. It's not like this is this or this is that. Rather, it's its own tattva of an injunction. So actually, all of human life is under regulation. Animals are not. That's the difference. But the clear statement is, the difference between human and non-human beings is that a human is supposed to act according to the direction of the Veda. When it says direction, that means injunctions. How to do things. So in discussing the demons, who don't know what is to be done, what is not to be done anymore, therefore, they make up their own thing. He gradually describes how a demon goes down to lower and lower species of life. And then, which is also called Naraka, hell. Trividim Narakas Yidam Dwaram Nasana Atmanaha. There are three kinds of gates or entryways into the cell, which is Nasana Atmanaha, which destroys the self. Nasanam Atmanaha, destructive of the self. So these are the three entryways: Kama, Krodha, Tata, Lobhas. Therefore, one must give these three up. So Kama, Krodha, Tata, Lobhas. Prabhupada makes it clear that this is developmental. First of all, Kama, desires to enjoy the senses, then krodha, anger because of frustration, and then greed, more and more desire to acquire various things which will satisfy the senses. One becomes more frustrated, greed increases, avarice, and so on. So these are the three enemies: kama, krodha, tata, lobhas. And then he says, now then Krishna discusses another destination. Here's one destination, right, where you go. These three paths leading down. Etaira vimukta kaunteya tamodwaras. So they here they're called tamodwara, the gates to darkness. Tibir naraha. So the one who has escaped these, vimukta, these three gates, that person performs activities, acharati, atmanasreyas. See, the one is nasanam atmanaha, destroys the self. This one performs atmasreya, for the good of the self, or benefiting the self. Tataha yati, and consequently thereafter he goes paramgati, another destination. It's really clear, right? Here are these three gates, kama, krodha, lobha, and they lead down into more and more lower species of life and punishment in naraka. And then the other place, that, and they're called the tamodwara, gates to the, and then so then the opposite, it goes to paramgati. So now we come to the verse. Yaha shastra vitim utsrija vartate kama karataha na sa siddhim avapnoti na sukham na paramgatim. So here paramgatim, the supreme destination, is again mentioned. So one, shastavidim utsuja, one who throws away, casts aside, shastravidhi, the injunctions of the shastra, and remains kama karataha, acting on the grounds of kama. Kama karataha. Prabhupada uses the word acting whimsically in lust. Whimsical. although it's a kind of light humor, in English, for Prabhupada, whimsy means doing things independently of the injunction of Shastra, according to your whim. Kama karataha. So that person, Shastra vidim utsija, vartate kama karataha. He's a person who acts according to karma. Nasa, for this person, he, siddhim avapnoti, does not achieve siddhim, perfection, na sukham, nor happiness, na parambita, nor the supreme destination. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims, but it's kama karataha. This is lust, which is it looks like the three gates are not like side by side, but one, then another, then another. Three gates. Attains neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. Prabhupada says, as described before, the Shastra Vidhi, or the direction of the Shastra, is given to the different castes and orders of human society. Everyone is expected to follow these rules and regulations. If one does not follow them and acts whimsically according to his lust, greed, and desire, then he never will be perfect in his life. In other words, a man may theoretically know all these things, but if he does not apply them in his own life, then he is known to be the lowest of mankind. In human form of life, a living entity is expected to be sane and to follow the regulations given for elevating his life to the highest platform. But if he does not follow them, he degrades himself. And then there's an interesting point. But even if he follows the rules and regulations and moral principles and ultimately does not come to the stage of understanding the Supreme Lord, then all his knowledge becomes spoiled. So the Shastra Vidhi is supposed to be progressive. In other words, for a certain person, the Shastra Vidhi may only say so much and take one to a certain level. On that level, there's other rules or higher rules, and you're supposed to follow those. So if you keep following according to your level, you will progress. So the idea is to be progressive. So at any point, you may be, according to one level, perfectly fine, but on another platform that you expected to have attained. And even if he accepts the existence of God, if he does not engage himself in the service of the Lord, he becomes spoiled. Therefore, one should gradually raise himself. So the Siddha Vidhi is to raise yourself, even if it's gradual. Raise himself to the platform of Krishna consciousness and devotional service. It is then and there that he attains the highest perfectional stage, not otherwise. Because this is what happens. So when you follow the Shastra Vidhi, you just don't follow it for the sake of following it. The sake is that you should advance to what is said here, the Param Gatim. That's why it's called a path. The word kama karadaha is very significant. A person who knowingly violates the rules acts in lust. He knows that it is forbidden, but still he acts. This is called acting whimsically. He knows that this should be done, but still he does not do it. Therefore, he is called whimsical. Such persons are destined to be condemned by the Supreme Lord. Such persons cannot have the perfection which is meant for the human life. The human life is especially meant to purify one's existence, and one who does not follow the rules and regulations cannot purify himself, nor can he attain the real stage of happiness. Though this is a heavy purport. And one should not think, well, because I'm a devotee, it doesn't matter so much, because then one is sinning on the strength of chanting, and there's offenses and it won't work. And at the end of this chapter, this Prabhupada has a long, is it this chapter? I think so. No, the end of the next chapter. He has a long, copies a long purport where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talked specifically how about Ajahnya's chanting. He was not sinning on the strength of chanting. Then it goes on. Because the next verse, Tasmat, therefore, Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavastita. One should therefore determine your Karya and Akarya. What you are to do, what you are not to do, by Shastra Pramana, by the evidence of Shastra. Jnatva Shastri, Shastra, knowing Shastra Vidana, the regulations of Shastra, Uktam, that's declared there. Karma kartam iha arasi. You should do your work in this world. Prabhupada says, so one should actually may gradually be elevated, which is the point. One should understand, therefore understand what is to be done and what is not to be done. Shastra Pramana. So human life, when it's human, is regulated by the injunctions of the Shastra. Interestingly enough, In the second chapter, Krishna had described this prototype human being, who's a sthitadi muni, sthitaprajna muni, sage of study mind, ideal type one should be. And Arjuna has asked about him, how does he walk? How does he engage his senses? And he says, a person freed from all attachment and aversion, raga and dvesha vimuktai. And able to control his senses because he's Videyatma. Prabhupada translates Videyatma, the regulative principles of freedom, can attain the complete mercy of the Lord. Prasadam adhikat shakti. But Prabhupada uses this term for Videyatma as the one who follows the regulative principles of freedom, Vidya. So he uses this term that strikes a lot of people as contradictory. The regulative principles of freedom. But there's two senses. Because when you say regulative principles, it looks like you're confined. You can't do whatever you want, which is called whimsical. But there's two senses in which they become the regular principles of freedom. The first thing is, and they're related to each other, the first thing is that by following them, these kama, krodha, lobha, start to go away. So you're following these principles, and then you resist the impetus, because when you follow these principles, then, and not necessarily that kama is not dictating, lobha is not dictating, but you say, I'm not going to be controlled by them, I'm going to be controlled by shastavidhi, shastra pramana. And so I'll be controlled by these other things. Somehow or other, one will control me or the other. So then I'm not controlled by these things. So by not becoming controlled by them, gradually they decrease in their power. Kama decreases, lobha decreases, anger decreases, krodha, they will gradually decrease. If I act according to their dictation, then actually they all become stronger. They gain power. I'm feeding them.
So what
do
you say that
the decrease
is all
this,
like,
karma? Krodha and lobha, what creates them? They're there because we are in contact with the modes of material nature. And so the modes are acting on us. And which modes act on us? That is because of our previous activities and previous lives. So it's acting. But we can change this by shastavidhi. We don't follow this dictation that's there. The impetus to perform sinful activities, and gradually they decrease. So we start to feel a sense of freedom. Suddenly, gradually, but we are less and less bothered by these things. So actually there's a sense of freedom. And as that sense of freedom increases, one understands the other sense of freedom. One is not controlled by material nature. This is the ultimate, the freedom not to be controlled by material nature. Otherwise, this is what we mean by a conditioned soul. Conditioned soul means I'm controlled by material nature. So first of all, one has to become free from the control of the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. And then one comes to the position of sattva-guna. Remaining in that position, then one can progress further to the stage of being transcendental. Here Prabhupada says in the last purport to the 24th verse of chapters 16, that's the last verse. In human society, aversion to the principles of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all fall downs. Aversion. So even before that, there's this aversion to the principles. That is the greatest offense of human society. Therefore, Maya, the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always giving us trouble in the shape of threefold miseries. This material energy is constituted of the three modes of material nature. One has to raise himself at least to the mode of goodness before the path to understanding the Supreme Lord can be opened. Without raising oneself to the standard of the mode of goodness, one remains in ignorance and passion, which are the causes of demonic life.
Prabhupada goes on.
Well, I once had a big argument with in the early days of the movement when I was saying that one had to come to the mode of goodness, and one of my god brothers was like pretty adamant that you could somehow go from straight from ignorance and passion to transcendence. It just this, you know, I had to find these passages and show them what Prabhupada was saying. Yeah. You can use activities in Krishna service, and you utilize the mode of passion in this sense, that you can engage in goal-directed activities, but you have to give the fruit to Krishna.
Right.
Okay, but that's not the mode of passion anymore.
Although,
yes, changing. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. And how will you use the mode of ignorance in Krishna service? That's a little tougher.
Well, when you have to break down walls and break up cements and you like to destroy things, yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Let me just read the rest of this. Prabhupada goes on, those in the modes of passion and ignorance deride the scriptures, deride the holy man, and deride the proper understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They disobey the instructions of the spiritual master, and they do not care for the regulations of scripture. In spite of hearing the glories of devotional service, they are not attracted. Thus they manufacture their own way of elevation. Prabhupada used manufacture their own way. It's an interesting phrase that Prabhupada uses. I had another place to look at. We won't get to that now. They manufacture their own ways of elevation. These are some of the defects of human society which lead to the demonic status of life. If, however, one is able to be guided by a proper and bona fide spiritual master who can lead one onto the path of elevation to the higher stage, then one's life becomes successful. The Prabhupada,